You ever realize that Dune is basically a Dare commercial that leads into a religious movement? You take drugs, take over a planet.
I guess?
Welcome to Eat A Fix, the podcast about a couple hyperfixating on obscure pop culture. I'm your co-host, Paul Unger.
And I'm your co-host, Jess Unger.
And it has been a while since we've been behind the microphone.
Because babies don't sleep their nights and we are tired.
So tired.
But we're here now.
And we are here to talk about one of our favorite things.
One of our favorite spicy things.
The thing that we're going to be talking about today is Dune.
Yeah.
And the many, many iterations of it. But before we get into that, this actually brought up something that ended up being a bit of an issue with ADHD and hyperfixations.
Oh?
So when I was younger, my dad came home with a VHS box set of Star Wars, the trilogy, when they re-released it on VHS. And I was super excited about it and got super into it.
Yes.
But the thing was that my interest in Star Wars eclipsed my dad's very quickly. And kind of we weren't able to talk about it the same way.
Okay.
And this kept on happening where I'd get super interested in a topic that someone introduced me to, like Pokemon. I had a friend who was super into Pokemon, introduced me to it. And then I got really into it. To the point where I couldn't talk to him about it anymore because I was more into it than he was. And eventually I found myself not able to talk to that friend or any friends about that.
Uh-huh.
So this kind of kept on happening. And then eventually I found something of my own. I found something that kind of I discovered by myself. Other people knew about it, but no one introduced it to me. I kind of stumbled across it. And that was Dune.
Okay.
And for as long as I've had my hyperfixations and my interests, this is one where I haven't felt like I needed to compete with someone else about like kind of stay within someone else's range. I'm allowed to be as excited as I want about it because I'm the one who introduces other people to it.
Okay.
Not the other way around.
Right.
So far, the only other person who's really met my interest on Dune is you.
Oh, that's because it's good.
And I love it. And it just kind of, it's nice to just have that because Dune is one of those things where it's like a safe interest that I've had over the years where no one wants to talk about it. So I've been able to kind of obsess over it for the past few decades.
Fair.
And outside of other people who have played the video games by Westwood, no one else really has any like interest in the books or the movies until recently.
That's unfortunate.
But strangely enough, I found out about it because of the video games.
Oh.
So my cousin had a demo disc of a bunch of, I think it was a floppy disc.
Wow.
Of Dune 2. And it basically is a reskin of Red Alert, Command & Conquer, where instead of money, you had spice. And that was used to build your resources. And it had three different factions, the Atreides, the Arconans. And what I later found out and was really upset about was the non-canonical Ordos, who are way more interesting in like in their non-existent lore than some of the other houses.
Okay.
And it makes me really upset that they aren't actually canon. Like, really upset. And I can go on about this forever. But I remember I had played these games and eventually reached the end of the demo and did that a bunch of times over. And eventually, going through our local used bookstore, I found a copy of that book. And it was way out of my reading range. I think I had just finished The Hobbit. Like maybe grade 8. And I was just like, finished The Hobbit, tried Lord of the Rings and realized it's like, ooh, this is a little bit more than I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my hands on Dune. And I just brute forced my way through reading it. And then I read it again. And then again. Until I finally understood it. And then I realized there was more books to it. Because the one I had didn't have like other books in the series. It was just Dune. And then now we have, I think, all of them, including some of his son's works, that truthfully, I haven't gone through all those because as an adult, I don't always have the time I want to read them, but...
Oh boy, howdy.
Yeah. It's been something that I've loved for a long time, and it's just, I don't know, it's nice when nothing can really invalidate that interest.
No, for sure. It's also nice to kind of grab somebody, show them your interest, and then watch them get sucked in as deep as you did. And they're like, holy cow. And you're like, right? See? All of these things. I did that with World of Warcraft with a friend of mine. He got super into the lore. And then he introduced me to the books. And I read so many of those and got sucked in so deep. Less so now. I've let that go. But as far as Dune's concerned, for me, it took me, I read it the one time, like 6 years ago?
I think so.
Something like that. 6, 7 years ago. And I didn't have the brain capacity to take it all in properly. I couldn't keep the people straight in it. I didn't know who was who. I was just like, okay, Paul, yes. Jessica, yes. Baron, yes. Okay. The Mentats? Cool. Who are the other people? I can't. Who's this? I don't. And I couldn't keep anybody straight. And then I had it through audiobook again, November, December last year when I thought we were going to record this. And I went through it and I found my brain could keep people straight this time. And I had a lot of, oh, moments this time around. So I understand a lot more now.
See, and I think that was my first experience reading it, is the second that they got to the Fremen.
Yeah.
That all the Fremen, the terminology around them just completely went over my head the first few times I was reading it.
Yep.
The one thing I like about it is the more times I've gone back to it and the story beyond Paul.
Yeah.
Like when I read it, it was more like coming off of the heels of like Star Wars fandom and seeing him as like, oh, the chosen hero. Like,
right.
And the more that I read it, I'm just like, oh, I'm starting to feel bad rooting for this guy. But
I'm not quite there yet. I don't have as much knowledge of the lore of what's going on or what's going to happen past the first Dune book. I did like a chapter or two of the one after it,
mm-hmm.
Messiah, I think. And even in those first chapters, it was like, what? What? I'm like, this shit, it just launches you into like scandal. You're like, geez, what is happening?
Actually, I know that for myself, because it's been a while since I've revisited any of the sequels.
Yes.
That there was a YouTube channel I am struggling to think of that does an in-depth breakdown of each book and then like the behind-the-scenes lore of it.
Ooh, okay.
So he goes into the Holtz field, which is like the technology everything in Dune is based off of. So space travel, Holtz field. Personal shields, Holtz field. Las guns, Holtz fields. Like all this comes...
Is it las guns or is it lays guns? Says laser guns, lays.
This is a GIF-JIF debate, and we won't be having that here on this podcast.
Okay.
Point is, he goes into a bunch of like the economy, the different houses, the feudal system, and how we got from AIs to human computers. It's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that has always kind of got my attention about this is the same way that it's explained in Thor, is it's so sci-fi that it comes off as magical and fantasy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
The Bene Gesserit are just structured in a way around sort of the rituals, but all their stuff is very structured and logical. It's all based in science. Mm-hmm. Mentats are based in science.
Mathematics.
The space travel and the effects of spice, all based around science. There's nothing fantasy about it. Even the whole thing of the myth of the Messiah on the Fremen, while it seems sort of fantastical, it is based on someone actually having implanted that with the sort of backup plan in case the Bene Gesserit, the people who are basically orchestrating the government, ever needed that.
Yeah.
So when you start looking at it that way, it's just fascinating. And it still comes off like I would still group it more with Lord of the Rings and Tolkien before I would put it with Ender's Game or anything from Foundation, Isaac Asimov.
Oh, okay.
It's been forever since I've even read any of that stuff.
Sorry, I gave Paul a look of what is that?
And I know it's wrong because it's not fantasy, but it always feels like it. And I like that it's so sci-fi, it loops back around into that feeling of it.
That's like so ugly, it's cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now having discussed that, before we get too much further into that, so Dune was your own hyperfixation that you kept to yourself. We have failed to honor the tradition for these podcasts and discussing what we are currently hyperfixating on.
Oh, yes.
So what are you currently hyperfixating on?
Okay, so this actually started off as me going through Dune lore videos because you were going through the audiobook.
Yep.
And I just wanted a refresher on the plot, and I found those videos about the different behind-the-scenes lore. Then that transitioned into other lore videos. So for Dark Souls.
Yeah.
And then Lord of the Rings. And then The Elder Scrolls. And I just finished like a two-hour one that was Drakengard and the Nier sort of lore. And basically how you got from one to the other. And I guess at that point, just Yoko Taro and his weird mind has just been this lovely little rabbit hole of lore because it just keeps on going deeper. Every time that you're like, I've just finished up Drakengard, it's like, oh, did you read the spinoff manga? Well, no, I didn't know about that. What about the stage play? Well, I guess I'm watching that on YouTube. And just... it's so much more than I could possibly consume. And I haven't been disappointed by drilling down further into it. I know eventually that well is going to dry up, but so far, every time I'm like, oh, I got through this game and like the lore of this game, I get told, oh, well, here's like these other hours of media to consume before you can even touch the sequel or the next one in order. And I love it.
Wonderful.
How about for yourself?
Well, I just finished mine and I'm quite upset because I was extremely into it. I binge watched all current 15 seasons of Murdoch Mysteries. And I just, it's so good. For a period piece, it doesn't take itself very seriously. And I know we've discussed this in the kitchen several times, but they make these stupid jokes constantly to modern things like Twitter or Facebook, like cell phones, or trying to make a callback to like a current word that we use, like teenagers. At one point, a journalist calls them teeners. And George Crabtree, who is by far, if he's not your favorite character, you better make him your favorite character or everyone will have words with you and I will be at the forefront of that line, sits there and he's like, teenagers. And it's always that one bit off and it's always George that does it. And every time George suggests something that makes sense in our world that we have, Murdoch always laughs at him. It's the best. That with the famous Canadian actor cameos usually as famous people in history, which are always cool when they show up in the shows. The last one had Freud in it. It was pretty great.
Yeah.
It's just, it's such a fascinating show. And I've cried and laughed so many times. And I just, it's so good.
And see, that's one of those things where, unfortunately, I haven't had the time to sit down and watch more than a few episodes at a time.
Which is infuriating because I really need to talk to somebody about this. And nobody else watches it that I'm aware of.
And it fits that vibe of a crime show, formulaic, but enough where you actually can't just guess the suspect right from the get-go.
Yeah.
And it has so many cameos that you've pointed out and so many interesting people, like the author of Anne of Green Gables is a character at one point.
Very briefly. And it's just like, oh, Lucy Maud Montgomery, holy cow. And like Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and Nikola Tesla and Alexander Graham Bell and Thomas Edison, who is an absolute jerk. And different people like that that end up showing up. And you're just like, what are you doing in Toronto? Why are you? And there's always some weird BS excuse for them to be there. Oh, a convention. Oh, I'm doing a book tour. Oh, I'm showing off my archaeological exhibit. Oh, this, oh, that. And you're like, there's no way, but all right.
In fairness, we live in a very small Northern Ontario community.
Yeah.
And we've had many notable people come through, including Thomas Edison.
Yes, back when we were like a one-horse town, yeah.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, in Toronto, it may not be so far off of those people to actually pass through.
And that makes sense. It was a pretty big town back then, all things considered, so yes. But I mean, if you're into period dramas and you like looking at pretty people, because Yannick Bisson is not easy on the eyes, holy cow, he is Canadian himself, it's very, very very good. And I highly recommend, and please, for the love of God, somebody else just watch it so I have somebody to talk to about this. It's infuriating.
I do have one gripe, though.
What?
By your own admission, my longstanding Canadian crush, Paul Gross, has yet to make an appearance on it.
That is also very maddening for me as well. But I did get news. I've been poking around on the internet, and I did find out that at some point this year, season 16 is coming out, so there's still time.
Okay.
There's still time. I'm holding out hope. If not, I will write to Maureen Jennings myself.
I would hope so.
I'll do what I can.
Okay, make it happen.
Because it doesn't make sense that he's not in it yet.
No, actually, that's the one thing that's super maddening, but he has been doing less.
It doesn't matter.
A little bit. Anyways.
Yeah.
It's not like I pay super close attention to Paul Gross's career or what he's doing.
Paul, be honest.
I've definitely been obsessing over his career for the past like 20 years. I saw Due South when I was younger and it awoken something in me.
And that's what I'm going to need to move on to next because I think it'll scratch the same itch.
Yeah. So back to Dune.
Yes.
Okay. So when this movie when?
Which one? Because.
Yeah, there's a few movies. So the big one that we want to talk about is the 2021 that just came out.
Yep, part one.
And there have been a few iterations. There was the Jodorowsky. I'm probably mispronouncing that to high heck.
Jodorowsky.
Which was a failed attempt at bringing Dune to cinema. And it was buck wild and inadvertently assembled a dream team of filmographers and artists and different creators together in the same room that went off to create so many other great franchises. So the people that were working on that eventually went off to work on the Aliens franchise. And most of the sci-fi series that you are familiar with all came from the team that was put together to make the first Dune movie.
Including the actors. They were going to pay a pretty penny to have Salvador Dali play the Emperor.
That's ridiculous. Oh, on that topic.
Yes.
This is just a timely topic. A bunch of people bought the NFT to the art book from that creation in the attempts of leveraging it to make an animated version of that.
Okay. Animated might be okay because I can see that going over well in a heavy metal style.
Yeah. Now, NFTs and the logistics of this aside, I just like that someone is still holding a torch for this and wants to see this come to light.
Nobody
and
needs it.
It's going to be a acid trip, no doubt. But I'd just be curious. I have that curiosity of still seeing what that original vision turns out to be, because it's definitely not book accurate.
No, it's a vision. But I mean, if you look into Jodorowsky's past works, he's got no filter for anything, whether it be human decency or morals or anything of that type. Like, I did deep dives on this and I watched multiple documentaries on YouTube about this as well. Of course, out of pure fascination, because I myself will periodically hyperfixate. And I will just quicksand myself into a subject. Yeah, I don't think it would be acceptable for human eyes of any age, because they were looking at things like the emperor was supposed to have a giant toilet shaped like two dolphins, one for urine, one for solids. And the intention was to have that demonstrated on film.
Okay. So maybe the crazy man's film isn't the best idea to put directly into cinema. But we didn't get that version. Did get in 1984 was David Lynch's iteration of Dune.
Yes.
And this movie was actually my second version of Dune that I watched.
Tell the people what your first was, Paul.
So the first one I watched was the sci-fi miniseries written and directed by John Harrison, featuring William Hurt as
Leto.
As Duke Leto.
Yeah.
And you had Alec Newman as Paul Atreides. At the time it came out, it was supposed to be a tie-in for the Dune 2000 video game, where we were still kind of okay with the full motion video on green screen and it not being a great quality. So when we were taking a look at it, it was not terrible. Going back and revisiting it, it does not hold up well. And after three episodes of watching that, not something I need to go back to again in the future. However, I do applaud him for doing Dune and Children of Dune.
Yes, there was consistency there at least.
Compared to Lynch's Dune, was a little bit more book accurate, while also not being book accurate.
It was...
He got some things right. He got other things wildly wrong and messed around with timetables and gave, like, other characters plot lines when they had no plot lines.
Yeah.
So it got really weird.
But I mean, that happened with the movie as well. It was just where... The miniseries had more, the movie had less, where the movie had more, the miniseries had less. You're going to get them all pieced together differently. But honestly speaking, it wasn't just production-wise that made it bad. It was how they pieced the story together. It was infuriating more than anything. Like, where they added the extra storyline where, like, the princess goes in and, like, half seduces Fade, and she's, like, doing all this investigative work to try and find out where Paul is. It's like, no, no, get out. I'm going to go watch Lynch because Fade is Sting in that one. Thank you.
Because, yeah, that was my first version of it. But the one that I have gone back and rewatched more times is Lynch's, where Kyle MacLachlan is Paul Atreides. And you have Patrick Stewart as Gurney.
Yep.
You have Sting as Fade.
Yes.
Ian McNeice as Baron Harkonnen. Just a lot of characters I was familiar with at that point, I knew Kyle MacLachlan from Twin Peaks. And I knew Patrick Stewart from TNG.
Yeah.
And it was a little jarring to see a young Kyle MacLachlan I didn't know how to process that.
He's so pretty and smooth-faced.
And then seeing Patrick Stewart with his...
some hair.
Yeah, some hair, but not where you expect it. Probably the best way to put it.
Pretty much.
And weird CGI that looks like the shields look like they have the same CGI that would later be used on Reboot for their Pong matches.
And also, actually, a little bit in the first episodes of TNG where you see the Borg.
Oh,
and where
yeah.
they discover that they have the adaptive shield.
Yeah,
it's
that
like
blocky
this weird
shield.
Blocky that show. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It basically characters lose polygons when they're getting hit in Dune.
Yeah. Their resolution goes way down.
It did have music by Toto, which was weird and synthy, but I love it.
Yes, of course.
And Sting.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah, Sting in a weird eagle codpiece coming out of a steamer. That is his introduction into this movie. And that has been burned into my brain for 20 years.
Yes, rightfully so.
I don't know what to do with that. But
sing Desert Rose, Paul. You sing Desert Rose.
My major gripe about this movie is they have to find a way to use what is called the weirding way in the movies, which is the Bene Gesserit fighting style.
Yeah.
And the movies have done it differently. In the 2000 version, it was almost like Johnny Cage's like shadow movement when he does like the shadow kick, where he kind of left like an after image when he moved. So
yes,
so it basically tricked your enemy, kind of. Like in the book, it's explained as sort of like a martial arts of like everyone's boxing and you bring in MMA and mess them up that way. There's a lot more skill. There's a lot more acrobatics. There's a lot more nuance to it.
Yeah.
But it's basically a much more skilled and controlled combat.
Yeah.
And in Lynch's Dune, and this is my main gripe I have with it, is they have what's called the weirding module, which is hooked up to basically utilize the Bene Gesserit's voice, basically their ability to command people by adjusting the frequency of their voice. In this case, it's supposed to amplify the voice and channel it through a gun to hit the enemy.
Yeah.
The thing about the world of Dune is the Fremen live alongside the worms and they have to walk without rhythm on the sand. Otherwise, they trigger the worms.
Yep.
It's basically going around the desert, tiptoeing around, trying not to wake up the civilization-eating toddlers that are lurking in the sand.
Yes.
And basically, their weapon of choice in this movie is to basically hook up boomboxes to their throats and blast sound left, right, and center. And this happens with absolutely no consequence for them. That is my main gripe with that. It is weird. And also, after seeing through 2 hours of lore as to why this is a bad idea, they just kind of hand wave it away. When this movie came out, cinemas actually had primers that you would go into, so you would have all the terms and you would know the history. And basically, one of their big plot devices ignores all the stuff about the sandworms.
Ugh.
So that one kind of broke it for me. I do like the knife fighting. They do kind of get a little bit more into the hand-to-hand, especially near the end.
Yeah.
But the one that I think has done it the best is the 2021 version by Denis Villeneuve.
Villeneuve.
Sorry, my French is atrocious.
Mine is not.
So he has directed Sicario and he has directed Blade Runner, the sequel, 2042, 2049, 20-something.
Yes.
And I was already excited when he came into this. And so far, it hit all the marks that I wanted in a Dune movie. I was so excited with like every screen grab I saw, every production still, I think like from the second they were starting to show off production art, I was like showing you every single time it popped up.
Yep.
And you actually got in on the hype once Jason Momoa was on, once Oscar Isaac was in.
Once I saw who the main cast was going to be, I was like, I don't know Timothée Chalamet from literally anyone else. But when they started hauling in like Oscar Isaac and James Brolin and Zendaya, and then they announced Stellan Skarsgård was the Baron, I sat and puzzled for a bit because I really wasn't sure how that was going to go over. I am very familiar with Stellan Skarsgård work, and I didn't know how that was going to go because we had had David Lynch's version of the Baron, which is basically a giant buffoon with his ridiculous heart plugs, whatever the heck that was for. That's what threw me off of that one.
Oh, yeah.
That was stupid. And the fact that the Baron had all these boils on his face that kept... Ugh. Anyway, I was like, that's not necessary, not book accurate. And why is this even here? Anyway, and it was kind of done the same way in the miniseries to a lesser degree.
He was a lot more...
He was more conniving and less of a buffoon, but okay. A buffoon nonetheless.
He was a little like cartoony villainy. Still, it felt like.
Yes.
And
yeah.
That was one thing with Skarsgård's performance. There was nothing madcap or funny about it. He was, from the first time you see him on screen, he was scary. And that was something where in the other ones, the Harkonnens as a concept, and when you see the world around them, that's the scary stuff. The Baron was just at the top of the food chain, but not scary himself.
Yeah, like he did do all the plotting in the background. He did plan everything and set everything up. So he did have at least an air of some intelligence to him with a bit of the ridiculousness. He liked to overeat. He liked to overindulge in his men, boys, whatever. So there was a little bit of the, not buffoonery, but not seriousness.
Yeah. Like
there's a little bit of ridiculousness to him. But for the first majority of the movie, you see Stellan Skarsgård and he is so ominous. And he is so foreboding and he is so gray. That's all I can really say. And it was like, oh, this is different. And then at one point he's trying to intimidate Doug Leto and he's sitting there eating cheese. And you're like, oh, there it is. Okay. All right. There it is. Yep. We're good here.
But it's really nice. And this is only part one that's come out.
Yeah.
I guess once this movie finally came out and when it got pushed from 2020 to 2021, my heart broke. There's Same. Already so many bad things happening.
I know.
That when this movie got pushed, it took me a while to process that because I was waiting for this movie so hard.
Yep.
And then it just got pushed back a full year. They didn't even wait till like first quarter. No, it's quarter four. Of the following year. It was upsetting.
I'm glad they did, though, because to me that says they want to do this right. They're taking their time. They're splitting it up.
Oh, no, no. It wasn't that. The movie was finished. And what they did was, with no one going to the box office, they pushed it back. And they didn't want to put it on HBO Max. And then eventually, at the beginning of 2021... they announced that they were just going to be doing a bunch of movies through HBO Max, but they were still going to be doing it through their schedule.
Oh.
So it was the fact it was done and that we still needed to wait because someone didn't want to lose out on any money. I am kind of glad because at the end of it, it garnered enough attention and enough viewership that they, I think within a week, announced that part two was happening.
Yeah.
I always kind of get a little upset when they don't just greenlight those two in conjunction because you end up having discrepancies or there's going to be like weird difference if you're watching them back to back. Like if you watch all of the Lord of the Rings movies together,
yeah,
there's consistency in the characters. They all look the same as they're going throughout. There's like no inconsistencies because they were filmed one, two, three. When you watch other series that are not, there are always going to be issues of like stuff like Mark Hamill had his accident in between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, but and, I think they covered that good with
the Wampa. That was the first one that came to mind. But there's things where either they might need to change out actors because they didn't plan to negotiate or stuff like that.
And that's infuriating.
Looking at you with the third Mummy movie, you know what you did. They didn't bring back Rachel Weisz.
After two, the quality's going to drop. I wouldn't go back either.
That's true. In any case, this movie, the one thing I really like about it is sword fighting and blade combat is a big part of the Dune universe.
Yep.
Everyone is supposed to be this very skilled combatant. Mm-hmm. Even the worst fighters are still incredibly skilled because everyone's using force fields. You can't use guns because they bounce off the force fields. And if you use las guns, you create an
explosion.
Nuclear explosion.
Yeah.
Due to the Holtzman field, which is science in Dune universe. But they use blades and they have to both fight and use it slow enough that they can actually pierce the shield of everyone.
Or hard enough that the shield doesn't have time to react to the to the blade.
And so when you're watching this fighting, every fight that you're watching on screen is really well done and I loved it. And then you get into Duncan Idaho, who, don't get me wrong, Duncan was already a favorite of mine from the books. But Jason Momoa as Duncan Idaho is probably my favorite thing I have seen on cinema in a while because he doesn't know how to die. He is too angry to die. Like, he doesn't have a health bar. He has like a kill counter that he has to run out of and reach zero before he's allowed to, apparently, because Duncan Idaho keeps on trucking. When you think he's gone, he comes back. And even when we know in story, he's done. He's not coming back. I still, after watching that performance, still thought he was going to come back.
We have a joke around the house where the next movie is just going to be Dune 2, The Return of Duncan Idaho.
Which, without getting into too many spoilers, is what happens down the line, but not in the first book, at least.
No, you find that out later on. It's so bizarre. Anyway. Yeah, it's weird.
But when it comes to this, I thoroughly enjoyed the movie. And knowing that I have to wait another few years to get more Dune, like I'll probably go and read the prequels now. And there's a bunch of short stories. I guess it wasn't until I was doing some chronological, trying to figure out where the books all landed.
Okay.
To kind of figure out the future order of me reading through them.
Okay.
That I realized that there's a few Frank Herbert short stories that I can go and read in universe. But this world just keeps on being something that I want to know more about. And I kind of wish that there was in some ways it's very interesting on a political level. Other ways, on a Mass Effect planet hopping style, there's so many different levels that I keep on finding interest in. I love it.
Okay.
And now I know that later this year, we're getting a new Dune game, but I think it's going to be something more in the line of Civilization called Dune: The Spice Wars.
Oh, that sounds not too bad.
Yeah. Now, it'll be interesting to see how it comes out, because if it's a real-time strategy game like StarCraft, Warcraft, that would be interesting. If it's more turn-based, I don't know how much fun I'll have with it, but I'll still give it a shot.
Of course.
I think I've just burnt myself out on the Civilization-style games for at least a couple of years. I went through Humankind when that came out, which was a new game developed by former Sid Meier Civilization people.
Okay.
A lot of fun, but I think I need a break.
That's fair. That happens. Now, before we come to the end, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So The Spacing Guild?
Yes.
They have their heads and they have the actual navigators that fold the space and do the travel.
Yeah, the weird ones that no one's allowed to look at.
Yeah, except for twice. One time in David Lynch's Dune, and one time in the sci-fi miniseries. Now, David Lynch's was a weird baby thing with a bizarre puckery mouth in a fish tank full of smoke. And then the miniseries was a weird, like, fleshy bat baby hybrid thing. Which one do you prefer?
Okay, so I either have the option of the Alice in Wonderland caterpillar a hotboxing itself, or albino Mothman.
Or you can just consolidate my weird traveling ideas into more concise thoughts. Sure.
I think I like Lynch's a little bit more.
I agree. I couldn't stand the bat baby thing. No,
it's, like, don't get me wrong. It's an interesting take. Someone definitely saw Lynch's and went,
no.
But they're flying through space, so we got to do something with wings.
They fold it. They don't fly. Yeah. Somebody didn't understand the assignment.
Which is weird because they do actually show a more accurate representation of what happens to the ship. But they misunderstood the assignment of what a navigator does and just kind of tried to steal a little bit of what Lynch's does, because in the extended version, it does something similar. But all in all, I like Lynch's more. I also think that Lynch took the idea of someone being infused with spice to the point where they're becoming like that slug style looking creation.
Yeah.
And what eventually happens to the Atreides with
God Emperor of Dune, Leto II.
Where he eventually turns himself into a worm through plot, but involving spice.
Isn't it sheer force of will?
And drugs. Can't forget the drugs.
Well, yeah, yes, of course. That stands to reason. If something weird is happening in the Dune universe, you gotta know spice is involved.
Yeah. But I think Lynch had a little bit more of an idea of what he wanted to take from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to give him props for that, because at no point does Mothman come up when I'm thinking about taking drugs.
I don't either.
However, just as we're ending off, what do you think spice tastes like? They put it in all their food, but it's also in the air. So
this is tough. My head canon immediately goes to sweeter Indian curry spices. Like when you breathe in, it feels warm, heavy cinnamon, heavy ginger, maybe a little bit of cayenne.
Smoked paprika.
Yes. Like a little cumin, like where it's cinnamony and warm, but heady. I've put a lot of thought into this.
Now I want to see if we can find one of those recipes for like spiced coffee. We found one a while back. We need to go and find that again.
How to drink.
Oh, yes.
Greg made one.
Yes, that's where we watched it.
Yeah.
So after this, we'll have to go and do that.
Absolutely. We'll do it on a weekend or something, because right now it is Monday and it is probably after 9 p.m. and I'm over 35 and coffee's not in my future tonight.
Maybe mine. Who knows?
No, because you need to go to bed at a decent hour as well.
Shh. I'll be fine. Now, we don't know what next episode's going to be about, but we're just going to go wherever the dopamine may take us.
Pretty much. And again, just know right now, until we can get our family routine a little more down and maybe ourselves a little more rested. We're only going to be putting out one episode a month because that is about all our mental health can take right now.
We have a limited amount of spoons.
Exactly.
But until next time.
Like what you like, no matter what the mean kids say.
Bye.
So big thank you to Ethel and the Androids for the use of their song Used to Know You for the intro and the outro. You can find the link to their SoundCloud in the show description, as well as all our links to our social media. And thanks for tuning in and listening to our podcast. If you like the show, be sure to review and subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice.